the Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem podcast.
Or M Cubed for short. I'm Sam, and she's Paige. Join our crazy train, and let's talk about murder!
We can just jump right into this motherfucker.
Yeah.
Second case of the night.
Yay!
Alright, so this one is another one that we had recorded before, but did not work out the first time. Because, one, I was sitting in a very squeaky chair, and two, I was entirely too far away from the fucking mic to begin with.
We are so closer now.
So, before I begin, I'm gonna say I am so sorry for all the sarcastic, bullshitty comments that are gonna come out of my mouth, because there is no other way to get through this terrible fucking case.
Man.
You lived it once. Do you remember all the detail?
Yes. It's pretty awful.
Also, another side note, there are so many fucking people in this case that it is very difficult to keep track of. So if I start calling people by their full names, or first and last name, don't be surprised. All right.
You ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Well, let's get it done. By God.
Jesus Christ. All right. So we are going to talk about the
brain
murderer.
Fart.
because there is not a lot on the victims on this case. Mm-hmm. There's like fucking nothing, and I know that their family still is alive and in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So this case happened in DeKalb County, in Tennessee. So one of the many people in this case is James Christopher Tatro. And I'm going to call him the ringleader because he fucking was.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll understand in, like, 20 minutes. So he was a rodeo cowboy, a college student, a family man, until he sustained a back injury at work, which led him to substance abuse.
Which happens.
It happens. This substance happened to be methamphetamine.
Oh, I was thinking pills.
And then it turned into whatever he could get his hands on. Like, he lists a whole slew of different, not medications, illegal substances that he took to deal with his back pain. He says it was for his back pain. I think it was because he needed to run away from whatever the hell was going on in his head. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So, by 1994, he was a heavy user of meth, cocaine, and so many other drugs, including, like, tranquilizers and all sorts of hallucinogens. It's fucking insane.
Hot damn.
Yeah. So, he and his wife separated shortly after he got on this lovely bender of meth and things.
Do they have kids?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think it was two sons. Then, shortly after that, he lost his job, and then he began selling, because how else is he going to maintain his supply?
Pharmaceutical sales.
That back alley shit. Well, actually, he didn't have to worry about a back alley, because he had a trailer. And in this trailer was the plethora of substances. So he was that house to come over for a fix or to crash or whatever the fuck it was that you were interested in at the time. Tatro, for some reason, went to Texas. Yeah, it was late in 1994. And when he returned, he found that his home had been broken into and a bunch of things were missing.
So he went on a drug run and came back.
It's not specified. Oh, and I got a lot of this information from a court document. So, like, one of the Court of Appeals documents where it outlines everything that was talked about in court and all that jazz.
Well, he took a trip to Texas, which is close to where?
Mexico!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he absolutely.
In the 90s.
Absolutely, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly. I've got to start using that word more.
You really do. So he went to Texas, and then when he came back, a bunch of his shit was missing.
Mm-hmm.
So, surprised the fuck out of me, but he went to law enforcement.
What the?
Yeah. He filed whatever the fuck it is.
They stole my drugs.
That was not on the list of things.
No, well, the shit that was on the list of things was probably full of drugs.
Maybe.
They stole my stereo. What was in the stereo?
Nothing. So, possibly drugs were stolen, but those were not reported to law enforcement for obvious reasons. So nearly 100 prize belt buckles that he had won during his rodeo events when he was younger.
Why would somebody want to steal belt buckles, though? Are they worth something?
Like, no idea.
Because that's just weird.
Like, unless they're made of some special metal, I can't see anybody stealing them.
I mean, maybe they're gold. But, yeah. I mean, how much are you going to really get off of that?
Don't know.
Sorry.
There was a lot of them, and they were like, oh, we could probably get quite a bit of money out of this. Let's do it.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense, but I just didn't know if they were worth anything.
The rest of this doesn't make any sense either.
Okay.
It absolutely had something to do with substances, because the next item on the list is a Navajo blanket that belonged to a deceased friend. Why would they steal that? It wouldn't be worth a lot. It's
no.
More of a sentimental value thing. An antique knife collection, so maybe that could be worth quite a bit, depending on the quality.
Mm-hmm.
His great-grandfather's coin purse that he had, a toolbox, and several guns.
So, yeah, guns. That's valuable.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, a toolbox, not really.
Probably not for him. Like, I could see if you were to steal a mechanic's toolbox.
Right.
They've got all those expensive shit in there to make their job easier, so
yes.
I can see that being... But, like, I think this is normal, like, Black & Decker bullshit toolbox.
Bullshit toolbox?
I mean, it weren't.
But, yeah, so, just, they were just taking random shit. So, do you think that they were just pissed off at him? Or they're just trying to get money for drugs?
Possibly that.
Okay.
Probably that. So while waiting on the sheriff's department to find his items or the people responsible for the theft, rumor was that Roger Zammit, John Harry, and Billy Teal were responsible for the burglaries. So, like a good old boy, he decided he was going to take matters into his own hands because the sheriff's department wasn't doing shit.
Then why even say anything?
I don't know, to have, like, when he did do something, be like, oh, it's because they stole my shit. I reported it to you. Maybe?
Sure.
I don't know. They're on meth.
Yeah.
There's no logical bullshit on
it. I mean, it's just weird that he would go to the cops when he's like, you know.
Oh, and yeah. It gets
Breaking Bad over there.
So, on January 10th of 1995, Tatro and four others went to the home of Billy Teal, one of the alleged thieves.
Okay.
I'm sure they were planning something nefarious, but that didn't go as planned because Billy and his father were able to hold the four men at gunpoint and essentially just told them to fuck off.
Like, hell yeah.
And not only just at gunpoint for a fucking half hour.
They don't fuck with me.
Oh, and they took a picture of them to be like, I got your picture, bitch. Don't come back.
Oh, Billy and the dad took
yes.
a picture. Okay.
Yeah, so they're holding them at gunpoint, take a picture of them, like, fuck off, forget about your shit.
Mm-hmm. So did they admit that they took the shit? Or they just said, no, we ain't got your shit?
Yeah.
You know, fuck off.
Fuck off.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right.
Your mom's gonna love this one.
Listen, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry. Butt fuck is my favorite word.
Butt fuck?
No, not butt fuck. However, fuck is my favorite word. I really have to watch what I say around you. They held them at gunpoint for half an hour. And this is per the court documents.
Mm-hmm.
They did this. Took the picture, all that jazz. But I don't think that Tatro's group had guns.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think that would have gone very differently.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Which is weird, because you said that you think they had something in store for them, but they didn't bring guns.
Yeah. Well, see, I...
Oh, wait, they're all stolen. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he could have... He very much could have gotten his hands on others, because he does. I just don't think he thought that Billy would give him too much of a fight.
Right.
There's four of them, so that he was outnumbered.
Right. He was probably holding them up with his own guns.
That would be quite
interesting. That's my gun you got in your hand, motherfucker! Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so between January 10th and January 12th, a drive-by occurred at Tatro's trailer. So, like, somebody drove by and shot up the house.
Pow, pow, pow!
He was there, but he wasn't injured in any way, shape, or form. If he had, this whole crazy train would not have played out the way it did.
Mm-hmm. So, did Tatro, like, have any kind of record or anything before all this occurred?
If he did, it wasn't...
violent?
It wasn't a violent one.
Okay.
Like, he really, prior to getting his back hurt and starting down the road with methamphetamine and the other substances, like, mm-hmm. he was a hard worker. He would work regularly, and he wasn't too bad, I don't think. Or at least not that the law enforcement could prove.
I mean, meth changes you.
And I think the only thing that was on his record previously was when he was younger, he had a misdemeanor or something for dumping manure on a school's parking lot.
Like a prank or something?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll dig into that a little bit more. But otherwise, there wasn't anything too crazy.
Okay.
On January 12th, 1995, so Kenny Mason, who was Tatro's friend, took Tatro to John Harry's cabin in Dry Creek.
And John Harry was another one that stole.
The alleged thieves, yes.
Okay, okay.
Because at this point, there was no proof, really. It was just through the grapevine.
So did he think that he did the drive-by? He doesn't know who did the drive-by at this point.
The drive-by is like some random little side note in the court documents.
That just happened. Okay. But they don't know who did it. Okay.
They don't mention who could have done it. However, I'm sure the Dry Creek gang.
Dry Creek Marsh! On Dry Creek Marsh!
Yeah, that's the one. They probably blamed it on them.
Okay.
Which probably is what led to the escalation.
Okay. So right. They're going to John Harry's.
So, while there are, again, several names, and I'm so sorry. Also, I'm not going to give you the first name of the people that are not directly involved in the crime. So, Roger Zammit was another one of the alleged thieves, and his girlfriend and her friend were there. So, I'll give you their last names, but not their first names, because they are still alive. It was only in 1995 that this happened.
Yeah, that wasn't long ago.
No. No.
I was a baby.
I was 6.
I was 4.
Yeah. Anyway, so while there, Roger Zammit and his girlfriend, her last name is Billings, so I'll just refer to her as Billings, and their friend, Mulligan, that's her last name. This is going to get really fucking confusing. So, when they get there, Roger Zammit, his girlfriend Billings, and their friend Mulligan arrive. Tatro and Roger Zammit get into a little word argument over here.
A word argument?
Yes. Listen.
A disagreement.
No. So Tatro gets out and he's like, hey, do you know where my shit's at? And he's mm-hmm. like, nah,
he
man,
confront,
no.
He confronts yeah. him. And
so he confronts him. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Word argument. What the fuck?
Listen, you said your brain was fucked.
Fist argument and a word argument.
They do get into a fist argument in a little bit.
He confronts them.
All right. Tatro confronts Roger Zammit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, open your fucking trunk. Mm-hmm. Because I guess he assumes that something's in there. I don't know. Maybe he got word through the grapevine that Roger Zammit had something in his trunk. Anyway, so when Roger did as he was told, Tatro saw a toolbox. And it looked an awful lot like the one he had stolen from him.
Okay.
To say he was angry was an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
So they began to fight. You know.
Fist argument.
Fist argument. Alright, so they began to fight. The fist fighting only ended because Tetro pulled out a butterfly knife. And I told you last time when we recorded this, I was like, I had to look it up because I was like, what the fuck's a butterfly knife?
You don't know what a butterfly knife is? Oh,
now
yeah.
I do. Just like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you can't see the hand movements, but it like opens up. And yeah. It just, there's a fucking knife.
Well, it opens up like a beautiful butterfly. And then
a
it...
deadly butterfly.
Gotcha.
Alright. So, the fist fighting only ended because Tetro pulled out the butterfly knife. And this was when Tetro decided he and John Harry, you know, one of the other alleged thieves, were going to cook up some good old meth or cocaine in the microwave.
So, the fighting stopped because he pulled a knife. And then he's just like, hey, I'm not going to cut you. Let's get fucked up.
Yeah, pretty much. He needed to refuel his veins. He didn't have enough meth in there. Or cocaine. So I say meth or cocaine because in the court documents, they literally could not remember what substance was used at this time.
Okay.
Also, random side note. How the fuck do you cook up some meth and cocaine or cocaine in a fucking microwave? Because in all my years of random knowledge from, like, working for, as a social worker, never once... have I heard somebody say, I cooked it up in the microwave and then shot it up?
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know why I expected you to have any answers, but I need some answers. So maybe if anybody out there knows, tell me, because I need some clarification because I need to connect the dots in my brain.
So I am not afraid to Google a lot of things, but cooking meth in a microwave is not one of those things that I would like to Google.
Apparently, that thought never crossed my mind, because I also did not do that. Yeah, so there's that. anywho. Alright, so while they cooked up that good old meth, or cocaine, whatever, Kenny Mason, the friend of Tetro's that was kind enough to drag him around, he was told to keep an eye on Roger Zammit while holding a butcher's knife. So after partaking in whatever mind-altering substance they decided to cook up, Tetro decided they would all go back to his place to party. So Harry and his girlfriend stayed at his house. Kenny Mason took Roger Zammit in his car, and Tetro drove Billings and Mulliken in Billings' car.
So, they were just threatened. So, is he, like, kind of threatening him? Like, he has to go?
Yeah.
Or are they just, like, you know how guys are sometimes? They fight and then they're friends?
I don't think that was the case on this
one. No? Okay.
No, I think this was, he found what he was looking for in the back of Roger Zammit's car. And that just... pushed him over
triggered
the edge.
But then why did he let Harry, John Harry, and his girlfriend stay behind?
Because his belongings weren't found on with Harry. Does that make sense?
Okay, so he didn't think that he did it anymore. He just thinks
Oh, no, I'm sure he did.
Oh, okay.
But he didn't have any specific proof at that moment.
Okay. So now he's just going to take it out on Zammit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So... like I said, Kenny Mason took Roger Zammit in his car. Tetro drove Billings and Mulliken in Billings' car. And you know it can't be a party without adding more people.
Well, yeah, you gotta have more.
So many fucking people in this case. On the way to his house, picked up Mike Redman, which happened to be Billings' half-brother, which is weird, and a Bruce Rochefort. Alright, so...
Kenny Mason.
Kenny Mason and Roger Zammit arrived at Tetro's home. There was a girl there that was just chilling out on the couch and asleep, actually. Her last name was Frederick. She comes into play later. Alright, so Frederick was asleep at the trailer and was awakened by Kenny Mason and Roger Zammit arriving. And because we were name poor to begin with, Let's add a few more.
Okay.
At some point, Philip Lawrence, J.J. Hendrickson, Jeff Sanders, and Tony Dan, they would arrive later.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so to recap, there are 13 names at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start with the ringleader, which is...
Tatro.
Christopher Tatro. I don't know if he goes by Christopher or if he goes by James, but I'm going to go with Christopher. Then there's Kenny Mason, which is his right-hand man, who helps him throughout the entire ordeal. Then there's Mike Redman, Bruce Rochefort, Philip Lawrence, J.J. Hendrickson, Jeff Sanders, and Tony Dan. Or Tony Davis. I haven't quite figured that out. Like, in some of the documents it was Dan, and other documents it was Davis.
Okay.
So we'll go with it. The victims are Roger Zammit and John Harry. Then there are three bystander witnesses, and they are, again, I'm not going to say their first name, just for confidentiality, I guess. Even though if you look up the documents I did, you can find them.
Yeah.
But again, that's because their families still live in the area. There's the Frederick female, the Billings female, which is Zammit's girlfriend, and Mulligan, who is also a female. And that's just one of the friends of John Harry and Roger Zammit. And Frederick was like a friend of Tatro's. She was mm-hmm. the one that was sleeping on the couch whenever they got there.
Yeah.
And she got woke up and was like, mm-hmm. oh shit, we're having a party. But it wasn't really a party. Now that that's out of the way, don't worry, it took me 5 minutes to make sure I had a complete list. I guess if only four people wasn't good enough, number for a party, 13 should be, right? So, they went back to this house for a quote-unquote party. So, obviously, there was copious amounts of substances.
Mm-hmm.
Meth and marijuana and
cocaine.
Pills and cocaine and whatever the fuck else you could probably find there.
Mm-hmm.
It was described in the court documents by multiple people that it was like the trailer was under siege, like in a state of siege. So they were gearing up for a war. They were expecting people to come to them, even though it, at this point in the court documents, it was like, yeah, they had a fight. Yeah, they argued about Tatro's shit, but there wasn't any specific, you're coming with me and you have no choice. I think it was all phrased in a way of, you're coming with me and we're gonna party.
Yeah.
Wink, wink. While dude's over here with a hatchet. I mean, not a hatchet, a butcher's knife.
Butcher knife?
Yeah.
Butterfly knife?
Butterfly knife. One had a butterfly knife, the other had a butcher knife. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Like, it's very confusing because they tried to downplay it, or at least Kenny Mason did, as far as the beginning of it, of... You know, they got into a fight, and then they were like, you know what? We're gonna go. We're all gonna go.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm assuming there was some overt threats, but it's not mentioned.
Yeah.
Or at least in the documents that I could see. If I could get my hands on the frickin' transcripts, I would read all of them.
Yeah.
All of them.
So, what was their lawyer saying that he went over there on his own? With his own free will? Is that what he was saying?
Essentially.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it was literally like, they shot up meth or cocaine or whatever the fuck it was that they warmed up in the microwave. And then...
Warmed. It's like it's a chicken or something. Some chicken nuggets.
Okay, that will show you how much I know about drugs. Okay. Logically, I know what they do. I don't know how to make them do what they do.
We just need to watch Breaking Bad again. They do not use the microwave.
They do not. And maybe that's where most of my information about meth came from. Sort of.
Nice pause there.
Okay, there was a huge pause there. But, I mean, social work, you get lots of people who do meth and stuff like that. So, okay. I have no idea where we're at. Okay, so... It was in a state of siege, so like they were gearing up for a war.
Mm-hmm.
They were expecting somebody to come up and try to take Roger Zammit back with them or whatever. So their description of this is Mason and the other accomplices that were there.
Mm-hmm.
They took turns keeping watch outside the front door with a shotgun in hand. Because what
That's not suspicious whatsoever.
How does that make you feel? Like, come over here and shoot up some meth, hold a fucking shotgun and wait for somebody to come. Like, some random bystander was very lucky they didn't show up that day.
Yeah.
Or at that very moment.
So, to say the least, it was very tense in that trailer.
Very, very. But they all did drugs. All of them. Nobody missed out. Even Roger Zammit. I guess they were convinced that Billy Teal and John Harry were going to come to the trailer. Like, those were the two specific people that they were worried about coming.
Okay.
Those two were the other alleged thieves.
Mm-hmm.
So, during this time, I guess since he found the toolbox that may or may not have been his, I'm going to go out on them and say it was, because later Roger is able to tell them where some other things were that were stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it escalates further. But anyway, Tetro had become increasingly obsessed with recovering his belongings. So they decided that beating it out of him was going to help find his items.
Mm-hmm.
So Roger Zammit was beaten and tortured while everybody in the trailer either watched or heard what was going on. I'm not entirely sure what part of the trailer Roger Zammit's torture actually occurred in. With John Harry later on, they're very specific. He was tied up in a chair in the laundry room or whatever. This doesn't specify.
Mm-hmm.
But there were those 13 people, well, give or take a couple.
Yeah.
Because people were just kind of revolving, like, in and out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point during this torture, he had a revolver pointed at his head and the trigger was pulled multiple times. He didn't know, but it was an empty revolver. But that's still...
terrifying.
Fucking terrifying.
Yeah. That's traumatic.
Yeah, to say the least. During these torture sessions, he was forced to stand with his arms over his head. Mm-hmm. He wasn't allowed to bring them down to cover his face when Rochefort or Tetro or Kenny Mason went to hit him. In the ribs, in the face, wherever they chose to hit him. And they did repeatedly. Until he finally gave them some information about the .22 rifle that was stolen from Tetro. Tetro was not the main aggressor in these torture sessions. He always had someone else to do it.
He was the brains, not the brawn.
Yes.
Not the muscle.
Don't get me wrong, he did come in and he did punch and slap and hit and kick, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the main portion of the beatings came from someone else.
His henchmen.
Yes, essentially. So, at some point, Roger Zammit told Tetro where to find his .22 rifle. And Tetro and two other accomplices drove to McMinnville, which is... it wasn't that far away because they lived, like, in between Smithville and McMinnville anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he told them they drove to McMinnville, and then they returned after getting the rifle. I tried to look up to see if there was any incident that occurred when he went to get this rifle, but there was nothing. So it must have been a very uneventful thing. He shows up with multiple people. Hey, give me my shit. They gave said shit, and he returned. Not so happily, back to his home. He then took Roger Zammit and Mike Redman to John Harry's house.
So, he took Roger Zammit,
the one that's being tortured, and then one of his accomplices, to John Harry's house, who was one of the alleged thieves.
Mm-hmm.
And they got more of their belongings from John Harry's house. So, they retrieved those belongings. He then went... they all went back to his house. John Harry did not. That's later.
So, did John Harry see that Roger is getting the shit beat out of him?
I don't know. He wasn't at Tetro's trailer.
Yeah, but you could probably see.
But I don't know if John Harry was at his home when they went to retrieve more belongings. It mm-hmm. doesn't specify.
Surely if he was, because he would call the cops.
Well.
Call the cops, you know?
Maybe. I don't know. There's a whole lot of they should have called, and then nobody fucking did.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole lot of fucking people.
So, if John Harry was there, I think they probably would have taken him with them.
That is true.
Back to Tetro's house, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure why there's little holes in the story there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I realize that they're on meth at this point, like, a lot of it, but... they got Roger Zammit in the evening from John Harry's house. They stopped, picked up a few people, went to Tatro's house. Mm-hmm. They beat the shit out of Roger. Mm-hmm. They went to McMinnville, came back, then went to John Harry's house, and then went back to Tatro's house. That just seems like so much, and I'm not entirely sure what this fucking timeline is. It hurts my brain. Mm-hmm. So at this point, we have to be somewhere in the early morning hours. And it is a bunch of people who were on very hard substances mm-hmm. telling the story later. But they were all fairly consistent as far as with each other. Kenny Mason was the main person telling all of this. And then other people like Frederick and Billings and
Mulligan
all kind of backed him up.
Right.
So that fucks with me because, I realize methamphetamine, cocaine, all that jazz, there's not a lot of time for sleeping. There's a whole lot of time for beating the shit out of people, apparently, but not a whole lot of time for sleeping. Mm-hmm. So they went back to Tatro's trailer where they continued to beat the shit out of Roger Zammit. He was kicked in the face. Chunks of his hair was cut out. There were small incisions to his scalp, shoulder, and arms. They fucking tore an earring out of his ear.
Oh.
So all of this insane behavior here. And then at complete odds of that, when he started bleeding too much, they let him take a shower. They bandaged him up. They thought they broke some ribs. So they put, like, an ace bandage or some shit around his torso.
Abdomen, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure what the fucking ace bandage is supposed to
do. Yeah, what was that supposed to do?
I don't know. But they did. They treated him, and then he was allowed to eat. They gave him some medication, and then he was allowed to lay in the bed, in Tatro's bed, actually, with his girlfriend.
Why didn't his girlfriend, like, go call the cops?
I don't know.
How old was she again? She was young.
She was young. Roger Zammit was only 18.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So she was also very young.
They're both babies.
Yeah.
So she was probably terrified.
Oh, absolutely. And she was probably... Later on, Tatro tells her, I promise I will get them back to their home. Mm. I will drop them off. As soon as you leave, I'll take them home. Mm. That doesn't happen.
Right.
So he's allowed to lay in the bed with his girlfriend for the rest of the day.
He's 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And his parents ain't whooping his ass.
Now, I don't know anything about his parents or his home life to begin with. At all. So I don't know if it's like a cycle thing or if it's a one-off thing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And it was in the 90s and there's not a whole lot of social media yeah. that I could pull up on that.
Right.
So I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's sad.
And actually his is the only, I didn't find his obituary, but I did find on one of those gravesite websites where it shows you the headstone mm-hmm. and where it's located and stuff. I did find it on there, mm-hmm. but I didn't find anything else anywhere else. Just to recap again, this all started on Thursday evening. Mm-hmm. And by this time, after he's showered and bandaged and everything, and he's allowed to rest, that's Friday morning sometime. Apparently I got really stuck on the freaking timeline because, like, that's a lot. So then Friday afternoon comes around and Tatro and three others went to John Harry's house, mm-hmm. and they got him.
And how old was John Harry again?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I know he was in, like, early 20s, maybe.
Okay.
Or around the same age as Roger Zammit. They got John Harry, and they took him back to Tatro's house. They then tied him to a chair, and they used the word spread eagle. So, in my head, and I could be wrong about this, but in my head, they had his legs tied to the legs on the chair.
Yes.
His legs spread open.
Yes.
And I'm not entirely sure what they did with his arms. I'm assuming, like, around the back or whatever. Mm-hmm. Again, doesn't specify.
That's what I picture as well.
And then Tatro decided to take a knife, or several knives, and start throwing at the seat in between John Harry's legs. So, like, in his crotchic area.
Crotchic area.
Yeah, what it is. Sir, you can't make me not use it.
The no-no zone.
The no-no zone. The no-no square.
No-no square. Can't touch me there in my no-no square. So he was trying to be a, what's it called?
Circus act,
yeah.
Yeah. He really wanted to, apparently. Because this went on for a little bit. So, while all of this torture and ridiculous behavior was going on, people were still coming to Tatro's house to buy drugs and shit.
Mm-hmm. Going in and out.
Yeah. So there's no telling how many people actually witnessed what was going on. There were several. In one such instance, a random woman stopped by the trailer for a few minutes, and Tatro reported to her that they tied John Harry to a telephone pole and whipped him with a belt.
Oh.
This, from my understanding, it was from the time they picked him up at John Harry's house and arriving at Tatro's house.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all fucking sociopaths.
Yeah.
So, this woman actually saw the welts on John Harry's back.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think she called anybody?
No.
No! Why the fuck would you do that?
Snitches get stitches.
I mean, literally on this end. Like, I don't understand. There's so many fucking people that could have said anything.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was just in passing to a random officer they knew. Because you know how small towns anyway, you know somebody. You're like, hey, maybe you need to go
check it out.
Run by Tatro's house real quick. Just be like, check on everybody there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe hours after you went, so it wasn't like immediately and they could draw conclusions as to who did it.
Right.
But they could have saved their lives.
Mm-hmm. And they were babies.
They were babies. So, at one point in the night, Tatro was kicking John Harry in the chest and the chin area, and they were beating him mercilessly. Yeah, that's right. John Harry's nose hit up against a vanity, and his nose started gushing blood. So, like they did with Roger Zammit,
mm-hmm.
they let him take a shower, they bandaged him up, all was well. Apparently, he had a large gash on his leg. I'm assuming from the knife throwing, they bandaged that as well. So, again, this whole being fucking terrible people, beating the living shit out of them, and then they're bleeding a little too much. Let's bandage them up.
Do you think they were treating them?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, maybe if they did get, I don't know, cops to come, they can be like, oh no, we're not beating them. Look, we've bandaged them. They are fine. They are fine.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to
wrap my head around. I would say I think he lost his ever-loving mind and just attacked these people, but then they just stop. And then they all do drugs, and everything's fine for a couple of hours, and then they go back at it.
Yeah.
Makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I don't know. And I don't think you can just be like, oh, they were on drugs, so this is the root cause of it. No.
They just got bored of beating them, and so they did something else.
I guess.
And then they got bored of doing something else, so they started beating them again.
Sounds about right.
I just don't.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't get it.
There's no logic in this at all. So he bandaged up John Harry, and he let him sleep on a pallet in his bedroom. So mm-hmm. Tatro's bedroom then had John Harry on the floor, and Roger Zammit and his girlfriend in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, or later that day.
So are we again, on Saturday?
Timeline, yeah.
We're on Saturday.
Yes.
Okay.
Again, timeline. Super funky. There's not like, well, at 6 o'clock we went and did this.
Yeah.
So on Saturday, Tatro and Redmond called Roger Zammit's girlfriend's parents, so Billings' parents, to come and get her and Mulliken.
Mm-hmm.
So Billings testified that Tatro got down on his knees and swore that he would take Zammit and Harry home as soon as she and Mulliken left.
I still would have called the cops. Well, I would have called the cops way before then, but...
Right, but... Okay, so, I'm... Another part that bothers me in this story is that when they were originally at John Harry's house, when they took Zammit originally...
Mm-hmm. And they didn't take John Harry right. or... The girlfriend.
That Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't they call then?
Well, there's that. But who was it? It was Tatro that drove in Billings' car with her, a Mulliken, and then picked up a couple other people and then went to his house. So I'm not sure why she couldn't just leave in her own vehicle.
Oh, yeah. I'll try it.
So maybe they got that wrong as far as whose car it was. Maybe it was Roger Zammit's. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that made no sense to me.
Right.
Now, I will say, Mulliken was actually able to leave the house, go to her house, take a shower and change clothes, and then she came back.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm all over the fucking place with this because it's so chaotic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. So I'll get into a little bit here and there as far as where people were and all of that stuff, but so it makes no sense to me. But anyway, so Billings' parents did come pick her up, and her father saw Roger Zammit standing on the porch. I'm assuming that he could tell that he was beaten to hell because they were attacking his face. His earlobe was bleeding, mm-hmm. or at least torn at that point.
Mm-hmm.
He had to have bruises.
Oh, yeah.
And all that man did was say, stay away from my daughter. He took his daughter and he left. And that infuriates me.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. If it was my kid that I had to pick up, I'd be furious that they were in that situation. Mm-hmm. I'd be fucking furious. I'd be like, don't you ever fucking talk to that person again. Not that that would help or anything. But then you call law enforcement.
Yeah.
But then you say, hey, this guy looks like he's getting the shit beat out of him. My daughter has witnessed this. I need somebody to do something.
Right.
You don't just say, stay away from my fucking daughter.
Raw.
I went full T-Rex there. So visual representation of full T-Rex is my neck goes all turtly, and my shoulders go forward, and my arms... My arms retract. That is what full T-Rex is. We're going to have to take a picture of this at some point because I keep saying it and everyone's like, what the fuck is that? So, it's not very surprising that Tatro lied to Billings whenever he promised her that he would take them home as soon as she left.
Yeah.
Which, again, I just went, Anyway, Tatro takes Roger somewhere to get more pills.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they've got a refill, I guess. And so Roger takes a couple of Xanaxes mm-hmm. and drinks some beer, and he passes out in the back seat.
Right, so they took him,
yeah,
too.
Okay, yeah. I thought you were thinking he went with Billings.
No, he went with Tatro.
Yeah. So again, though, I don't know what Xanax is going to do for the pain that they caused him from physically beating him,
mm-hmm.
but they were going to do it. Okay. So, he's passed out in the truck, or in the car. I'm not sure which one. Truck, because it was Tatro's. I really wish he could have, like, not been passed out and just faked it and just took off, because that would have been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But that did not happen. So, Roger Zammit was passed out in the truck or car. The Frederick girl comes back, because she had been out away doing whatever the fuck she was doing. She came back to Tatro's. And she was very upset because some of the Dry Creek Boys, were coming to retaliate, and she was not going to stay for that shit.
Goddamn Dry Creek Boys!
That's probably what they're thinking. So obviously, it's best to throw some fuel on the fire that is already just blazing at this point. And that's all she fucking does.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she does. So
watch out for them goddamn Rocky boys that coming over here. Oh shit. No drama.
That's probably what they were waiting for at that point.
Have the math.
But it's been, okay, so they had them Thursday, Friday, and this is Saturday.
I was gonna say, does nobody have jobs?
We've already listened. You can see the look.
Come on, Paige, you dumbass.
This is the house for all the shit to happen.
No drugs. No jobs.
Only drugs.
Only drugs, no jobs.
Yeah. It's like OnlyFans, but only drugs. Except I don't think any of them really get paid for stuff. It's like they steal shit and whatever. Anyway.
Oh, wait, pharmaceutical sales, I forgot.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Okay.
But everybody else that doesn't, like, everybody else is buying, so they need jobs.
How many people do you know that are on meth that hold a steady job?
I don't know anybody on meth.
Okay, when I was a social worker, I knew a lot of people that were on meth, and none of them could hold a job.
Yeah.
Because their behavior was so erratic. Like, the ones that were smoking weed... They were fine. They just smoke after work and just keep going. Mm-hmm. That's it. But the ones on meth? Nope. Which, honestly, I can't say that I blamed any of the employers because erratic behavior.
How do they afford the meth?
There are favors you can do for some people.
Sam, that is scandalous.
Oh, no. However shall we live?
Not the Dry Creek Boys.
Oh, God. Anyway... We got real far off there.
We're still talking about the topic in hand.
This sort of, but then we just got, like, we veered to the left a little bit.
We stayed course. We're just taking the scenic route.
Do any of them have jobs? No.
Okay. That's all you had to say.
None of them have jobs.
All you had to say, Sam.
Actually, I don't know if that's true or not. Yeah. It doesn't... go into each person's life in the court document.
Right.
Continue. So, I can't really say that I blame her for, like, getting the fuck out, but I don't know why she would have come back just to say, hey.
Dry Creek Boy's coming.
That. And then. and then peace the fuck out. Like, yeah. I would have just been like, I ain't going back. So. Again, I'm going to point out that all of these people could come and go as they please. Mm-hmm. And because they needed food, they needed more alcohol, they needed more drugs. They had all these people to go and do drug runs and food runs and all that shit. And like I said earlier, Mulliken had apparently gone home, showered, and then returned. Why she returned, I don't understand.
Mulliken did?
Mm-hmm. The friend of Zammit and his girlfriend. She was also really young, too.
Okay. Frederick's the one that was like, hey.
Yeah. Frederick was the one that was sleeping on Tatra's couch whenever they all got there.
Okay. Okay.
Again, super confusing. So, it drives me fucking insane that not one person out of all of these people decided to help. Mm-hmm. None of them. Not one person decided to call law enforcement or, I don't know, tell their elderly grandmother, like, these people are doing this to these men, and, you know, let their grandparents call in. Because, like, you know, you can't have responsibility if it's somebody else, right?
Well, if they called it in, mm-hmm. then their supplier is no more.
Well, at this rate, their supply is going to be cut off anyway.
Why?
Because the end result of this is Tatro goes to prison.
But they just think he's going to get away with it.
Well, I guess they didn't really know that he was planning on killing the two men, but...
Yeah, that is true, too.
At the same time, like, they saw the escalation.
Yeah.
They saw it. So, anyway. Like, I'm very flustered that these people didn't fucking call anybody.
Yeah. I mean, it's awful.
I can't imagine sitting in the courtroom and as a family member to the victims.
That nobody did anything.
And hearing each person say, oh yeah, we went on food runs, we went on liquor runs, we did this, that, and the other. But not one person tried to help them.
And it's been 3 days, so I wonder, did the family try and get in touch with Zammit?
I don't know.
Because he was 18.
I can't imagine. So, about 30 or so minutes after Frederick leaves the house, after coming be like, them Dry Creek Boys coming up, Tatro's mother actually stops by his home and just to check on him, because she's worried about him. So they spoke on the porch for a very small amount of time. She never walked in the house, she just stayed on the porch. And at the trial, she testified that her son looked crazy and he was strung out on drugs. Mm-hmm. She confronted him about being on drugs and stuff. He got pissed off, and she ended up leaving. I feel like that was a bad day to confront him, but I'm glad she got to leave.
Yeah.
Because he woke up and chose violence that day. Actually, over the last 3 days. So after Tatro's mother left, Kenny Mason says Tatro wigged the fuck out. Tatro went into the trailer, grabbed a styrofoam bat. Not sure why there was a styrofoam bat, but he grabbed a styrofoam bat and began beating John Harry, like, in the face and all over with it.
Like a wiffle ball bat?
They said styrofoam. I'm assuming it's like a wiffle bat because, like, aren't they covered with, like, a soft material? I don't know. It's not a, it's not a hard bat.
Just a soft bat.
Just a soft bat. He's just fucking wailing. Why is he a soft bat? I don't know. They're on
meth. He has a kid, right?
He's got two.
Okay, yeah.
So that might be why. But his wife had custody of them. Or at least kept them the majority of the time.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably why he had a bat.
So he's beating the shit out of him with this styrofoam bat. And because nobody wants to be left out, Jeff Sanders comes in and starts kicking and punching and whatever the fuck comes to his mind to John Harry. John Harry starts bleeding again. And we all know that bleeding is one of those triggers that are like, oh no, can't have him here. Let's get him cleaned up. So Tatro orders Mason and Sanders to get John Harry up and put him in the bathtub so the blood will stop getting all over the fucking place.
Mm-hmm.
Once they had John Harry settled into the bathtub, Zammit was dragged into the trailer by his hair. Tatro ordered Kenny Mason to put duct tape on John Harry's and Roger Zammit's mouth and hands, which at this point is not very necessary. I wonder which kid that was.
Mm-hmm. Scare tactic. Anyway, that'd be terrifying.
That'd be fucking terrifying. Like, okay, imagine being blacked out in the fucking back of a truck or whatever and being drug in by your hair.
I know, I wish it would have escaped.
So, I don't know why it would be necessary to put duct tape on their mouth and hands at this point, because it seems like they had plenty of opportunities to fucking run or scream or whatever, and they didn't.
Right.
I don't know about the screaming part. They probably did that. I wouldn't do that with what they had to deal with. But Zammit was left in the truck forever, and he didn't escape. People were going in and out. And I know that they were all on meth, and they probably took turns sleeping or whatever, but in all honesty, they probably had the opportunity to escape. But because they were treated the way they were, they beat the shit out of, and then they were taken care of, they probably thought that after they get their anger out, we'll get to go home.
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't know why they put the duct tape on them. But like you said, it's probably a scare tactic. Tatro decided that they needed to put duct tape only on Roger Zammit's eyes.
What?
Yeah. So, Roger Zammit had his hands and his mouth taped up. And his eyes. And then John Harry only had his hands and his mouth taped. So, they got everybody taped up, and they arranged them in the bathtub. So, Roger Zammit was kneeling, facing the faucets and stuff like that. And John Harry was placed behind him in a kneeling position. So, then the accomplices just kind of crowded around. So, in the room at this time was, obviously, Roger Zammit and John Harry in the bathtub. Mike Redman, J.J. Hendrickson, Christopher Tatro, and Jeff Sanders. So, Kenny Mason was involved, but then he was asked to leave to get something, and then he returned.
Mm-hmm.
And upon returning, Tatro had placed a bag over Roger Zammit's head, a cord wrapped around his neck. Tatro had his knee in Roger Zammit's back, pulling the cord. Mason testified that it looked like Tatro was trying to ride a bull.
Yeah, that's awful.
Mm-hmm. So, Roger Zammit fought back as much as one can with the bag over his head, taped up. Tatro didn't like that very much, so he demanded to be given a heavy fucking flashlights, and which, you know, was provided by Mason, of course. Then Tatro began to beat Roger Zammit in the head with the flashlight until he slumped, and they thought he died.
Right.
So once he slumped over, Tatro and everybody else kind of left the room. Then it was found that Roger was not dead. I guess they found that he was still breathing or something. So Tatro went back in there. And so did his...
posse.
His posse. That's the best word for it. Tatro forced John Harry, who was left in the bathroom with Roger Zammit's supposed dead body there, he forced him to pull the cord around Zammit's neck until he died. All while Tatro was over here just laughing maniacally. He was having a grand old time with it. So, once Roger Zammit did die, everybody, except for John Harry, went into the kitchen. Now, He was forced to stay in the room, in the bathtub, with Roger Zammit's lifeless body. Kitty Mason testified that he opened the window in the bathroom because it smelled bad. And then he turned off the lights, and he joined the others in the kitchen.
That is awful.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, all my energy just left my body.
I mean, that's awful. I can't imagine.
No. And at this point, I'm assuming that John Harry knows what's going to happen to him.
Yeah.
He just doesn't know what the manner of death will be.
Right.
And he's forced to sit there.
In the dark.
With the man he was forced to kill. Yeah, there's no... I don't even know how you lighten it up from that point.
No, you can't.
It's not done. The group of men sat in the kitchen table, smoking cigarettes and a joint, and they were coming up with their next move with John Harry. So Tatro ordered Kenny Mason and two others to help him get John Harry out of the house. So they marched him out the front door and into a nearby field. John Harry was walking in front of them, and then the others kind of let him get a little bit further away. I think they were trying to see if he would run, to be honest, but he was still bound, I think. Once he got far enough and he passed this little gated area, like in the fence, I don't think it was anything fancy, I just think there was a little gate, because farming. Once he reached that gate that led in further into a field, he tried to run for it. This brief freedom would only last about 30 yards, though. When he stumbled and fell, he wasn't able to get up fast enough, and Tatro caught up with him and dragged him to his feet. He told John Harry to keep walking, and after a couple of steps, Tatro kicked Harry in the back of the legs, causing him to fall down, and he fired one shot with the .22 rifle in the side of John Harry's head.
Why even pick him back up to make him walk again?
He's a sociopath. Like, I don't know.
That's just awful.
Full T-Rex. Anyway, so, once both men were murdered, they had to figure out what to do next. Tatro and the accomplices, or probably just the accomplices, because we all know he doesn't want to lift a finger unless it's to do some type of violence, they began cleaning the trailer. They removed bloody portions of the carpet. Both men were wrapped in woven wire fencing and then in the bloody carpets that they removed. I don't know what the purpose of that is. It would make more sense to wrap them in the carpet and then the woven fence and, like, zip tie it or some shit shut so that it... I don't know. It makes no sense.
I don't usually move dead bodies, so I don't know.
I mean, neither do I, but... Logically thinking, isn't a carpet just gonna go boop, unburrito?
I mean,
I assume they were like burritoed up in it. That sounds terrible. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense. Like,
why? So they wrap the body in barbed wire.
Not barbed wire.
Oh.
When I heard about this case a really long time ago, I heard that they were wrapped in barbed wire and then with the carpet. But they were just wrapped in fencing. Like, I'm thinking, like, chicken wire, to be honest. Like, I think that's similar to what was there.
Where did they put the body after?
Who was it? Tatro, Redmond, and Hendrickson took the two men and dropped them from a bridge and into Center Hill Lake.
So maybe the fencing made them heavy?
Well, they tied cement blocks to them so they would sink.
Okay.
That doesn't work, though.
So, they wrapped him in fencing, and then in a carpet.
And then tied cement blocks to them.
And dropped them.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. So, they were dropped from a bridge. I'm not sure if it was Hurricane Bridge or if it was,
Sligo.
Sligo. I'm thinking it was Hurricane anyway, but I don't have any specifications on it. Or I couldn't find specifically where they were. Where they were dropped from. Kenny Mason was in charge of hiding the revolver and dynamite, which I'm surprised was not mentioned before now. Seems really stupid to have dynamite in a place that is a drug den.
Why?
I don't even know where the fuck you got it. You get dynamite.
Why did he have dynamite?
I don't know. I don't know. But this brilliant motherfucker.
He probably got it from Texas.
Maybe. This brilliant motherfucker threw the revolver, which, by the way, was not used to kill either man. I'm not sure why they were hiding the revolver.
But he was shot in the head.
He was shot in the head with a .22 rifle that was stolen from him.
So, oh. Maybe they just got it wrong in the court documents?
Maybe. But either way.
They hid a gun that they didn't even use?
Right. Now, this was, I'm pretty sure this was the one that was used to scare the shit out of Roger Zammett to begin with. You know, when they were pointing at him and pulling the trigger with no bullets in it.
Weird.
Yeah. So he threw this revolver in the brush, like, across from Tatro's property. What?
Yeah. Who did?
Kenny Mason.
Okay.
Fucking brilliant. And then he hides the dynamite in a nearby culvert. So it's like, I'm just gonna hide you here. Nobody will ever find you. Boop. That's the sound it made, too. So, once he did his brilliant hiding skills there.
He did not win at hide and seek.
He really did not. Mm-mm. So, he then was in charge of burning the clothes, the towels, and anything else that would be left behind as evidence.
He should have just blew it up.
But then that would have caused more attention to go on them immediately.
Like, oh. Do some dynamite fishing.
Maybe that's why they fucking had it.
Go dynamite fishing? Let's do it.
I don't know. I don't want to because I'm afraid I'll blow myself up.
You know that's how they used to find dead bodies in the lake? Throw dynamite?
What?
Uh-huh. Before they had, like, the... What's it called?
I don't know.
The claw thing?
Yeah.
That they dragged the bottom? Yeah, they would... I
never thought about how they did the... I... Oh!
So they would throw dynamite... though, I think it had to be, like, lakes and creeks. I don't think it could be, like, you know, anything. Like, it had to be more shallow, pretty sure. But, yeah, they would throw dynamite, and it would make it to where they could see the bottom, you know?
Yeah.
And they could see if there was any bodies down there or whatever.
Wouldn't that destroy evidence?
This is way back when.
Okay, that makes sense, because, like, they didn't have the diving equipment.
Yeah, they didn't have the diving equipment or any of that. That was way back when. Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
I mean, they're already dead, I guess. Yeah. So, it didn't matter.
Yeah, but they need to find out who fucking did it, so blowing shit up does not make sense.
I don't think they had that kind of...
knowledge at the time.
Yeah, or either. That kind of...
mentality.
Yeah, or... I don't know. Like, I just don't... I remember reading that. It was not on TikTok either. I actually did read it before they had the... I don't remember what it's called, but the whatever they used to drag the bottom of lakes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now. Like
before
it's
that.
It's been a really long time since I've thought about that, and I used to work closely with law enforcement, and I remember one of them telling me that they hated dragging the lake around here because you know there's a certain sound or feeling to the equipment you know when you found them.
Hmm.
Blah. Anyway. So, Flappy Bird now. T-Rex, Flappy Bird, what the fuck? Alright, so, they've done all of this to get rid of all the evidence and everything. Well, the next morning, on Sunday, which is January 15th, so this is the fourth day after Roger Zammett was kidnapped, his girlfriend reported Roger Zammett and John Harry missing. A deputy went out to... Tatro's house at 4 o'clock in the morning. So that seems, I guess if you're looking for somebody that's missing and that's the last place they were seen, and I'm sure there is more to the report than they're just missing.
They probably know that those motherfuckers don't sleep and they're up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So.
So listen to this ballsy ass bullshit. So Tatro answers the door.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Calm as can be. Three other men were sitting at the table drinking beer and playing cards. How do you just fucking calm as can be after that? After all the bullshit you just did, they're gonna be like, oh, hey, officer, how's it going? I wrote, you know, as one does after torturing and murdering two people, disposing of their bodies, and being questioned by law enforcement officers. Now, this blew my mind, too. Apparently, the officer, or deputy, or whatever, said the home looked neat and clean. Tatro did not deny that Roger Zammit and John Harry had been there. He'd even gone as far as to admit that he had given them a ride after giving them a good whipping for stealing his shit. But after that whipping, he dropped them off in the Dry Creek area where they were picked up by somebody in a black Camaro.
Did he say whipping? Mm-hmm. Because that's really, it's just me ick. It's giving me ick.
Yeah. No, he did. He said it. It's in quotation in the court documents. Everything about him gives me the ick, though.
That is true.
Anyway, so the deputy noticed nothing out of the ordinary in Tatro's speech or demeanor. And apparently none of the men appeared to be intoxicated.
At 4 o'clock in the morning.
At 4 o'clock in the morning, drinking beer and playing cards after murdering two individuals and getting rid of their bodies. So, he said that nothing was out of place, or nothing seemed out of place, you know? So I'm gonna stop right here and call bullshit so fucking hard. He may not have been able to do anything because there is a limited amount he could do with just, oh, these people were reported missing. These were the last people to see them alive. And yeah, the house was fucking clean because they cleaned up. But as a social worker for like 7 years where I had to go into people's homes and talk to them about their substance abuse and all of this other stuff, there has never been a time where I went to a drug den and thought, this place is clean. Not one fucking time.
Maybe OCD?
No. 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 Because, sure, they have those spontaneous moments of cleaning or whatever, but it's never enough because there's so many fucking people in and out of the house that there's no way that it's just, oh, it's nice and clean, and that's not out of the ordinary. Not to mention the pieces of fucking carpet that were missing.
Like, did the officer go in the house?
He did. But I don't know if he searched. Because I'm not sure how.
I doubt he searched.
I doubt he was allowed to go too much further into it without more evidence.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that the officer did anything wrong by any means. Like, whatever. But you can't tell me that the house was, there was nothing out of the ordinary. You fucking can't. Anyway, I bet that Tatro had, like, a baseline for his sober-ish moments. Like, he's fucked up, but can still function.
Functional, yeah.
Whereas if he was sober, there would be a massive difference. I'd be like, dude, you're fucked up.
Yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me all that much. But he had to have some weird little tingly thing in his brain going, something's not right here. It's just, there's just something off. Which, they later searched the area, so, and this officer is involved. Several days had passed, and the two murdered men obviously had not returned home. While the sheriff's office continued to investigate the missing men, they did a search in the surrounding area of Tatro's home, and they found the .357 Magnum revolver that Mason so cleverly hid across the fucking road from Tatro's house. And apparently during the investigation, they spoke to all the men that were involved in these brutal beatings. Kenny Mason was one of those men that they spoke to, and he made some sort of statements that implicated every single one of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So, after Mason's lovely confession, I'm not sure if it's a confession or not, but the weird little statements that he said started adding things up. The TBI got involved when they suspected that these two men were murdered. So, on January 24th of 1995, TBI agents James Moore and Mark Gwynn arrested Tatro and took him to the DeKalb County Jail. From there, he was taken to the Putnam County Jail. I'm not entirely sure why he was transferred. It didn't specify on that end. But he was comfortable in the DeKalb County Jail. And actually, in the appeals paperwork that I was reading, he claims that the two TBI agents had promised that if he confessed, they would move him back to DeKalb County. And I just think that's a very odd thing to do, be like, I want to be back in my hometown. I don't understand. On January 27th, 1995, so just 3 days after they arrest Christopher Tatro, they find Roger Zammit and John Harry's body in the Center Hill Lake. They describe the pictures in the court documents, and it just... Anyway, so after finding the bodies, a warrant was issued to search Tetro's truck, because that's how he hauled them from one place to the next. The TBI agents informed Tetro that they were going to search his truck, and like 10 minutes after he left, or not he, but 10 minutes after they left from talking to Tetro, Tetro began pacing, and he started yelling, "I can't take it anymore, I want to confess." And he said, "Get them back down here." So he was taken to a room with the two agents. Before they could say anything, anything at all, he said, "I did it, I killed them both, I'm the one that done it."
Well, that was easy.
Yeah. Well, he claims that he was still intoxicated or coming down from the substances that he was on, because, again, this was 3 days after he was arrested. And so there's some hairy moments there with consent and all of that shit. Mm. Not that that's held up at all. Because not only did he confess then, he confessed multiple times after that, too. But he confessed to strangling Roger Zammit to death and shooting John Harry in the head with a .22 caliber rifle on the evening of January 14th, 1995. So during the trial, it was very interesting to read some of the comments and stuff that were made in the trial. The medical examiner, Dr. Charles Harlan, testified it would have taken anywhere from 30 seconds to 3.5 minutes for Roger Zammit to die of ligature strangulation. Roger Zammit had multiple contusions on his face, lacerations on the back of his scalp, and a grooved depression and abrasion around his neck. Zammit had a shallow incision on his upper arm and one on his leg, I think. It's his posterior flank. Seems like a really weird phrasing. Anyway, so they said that the cuts occurred prior to death, as did the laceration on his bottom right earlobe and gash behind his right ear. They specified that Roger Zammit had no broken ribs because Tetro and the others believed they had broken his ribs when they were beating him.
Yeah.
John Harry, obviously, died of a gunshot wound to the head. Harry had two incisions on his face and another on his upper elbow that was covered by a Band-Aid. And he also had many bruises all around. Both of them did. Tetro tried to go with the insanity defense.
And they said, hell no.
No. So here are some of the people he tried to use to support that plea. Dr. Donna Seeger, a physician certified in toxicology, and Dr. William Kenner, a psychiatrist at the St. Louis Psychoanalytic Institute. Dr. Seeger testified that long-term use of substantial amounts of methamphetamine and cocaine would completely change one's personality. Delusions and paranoia would appear. Like we all know that methamphetamine specifically has some crazy paranoid delusional thinking that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
She testified that 2 grams of meth a day is a high dose and would likely bring hallucinations with it. And a common hallucination for meth users is bugs and insects crawling under their skin, mm-hmm. which is why you see them, like scratching and sores and stuff.
And they eat their scabs.
And they do that as well. But that's for a different reason than bugs crawling on their skin. That's to get the methamphetamine that had come
tasty
out of their body to replenish their supply if they do not have an active supply.
Right. Oh, you get to listen to that later.
No. So Dr. Kenner examined Tetro over a 2-day period. He interviewed family members and at least one co-defendant. I'm betting it was probably Kenny Mason, but it didn't specify.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Kenner noted that 2 family members suffered from depression and had completed suicide, and cited that along with his failed marriage, the work injury to Tetro's back causing considerable pain. He cited these as mitigating factors that led him to make such poor decisions, which ultimately led to the death of the 2 men. Which makes me angry because it makes it sound like it's not his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so after hurting his back, he continued to work at that job and on his parents' farm. Within a few months of the back injury, a cousin completed suicide and his parents got divorced or separated. And his parents had to sell the family farm during the divorce proceedings. And then shortly after that, the separation with his wife, and then he began to spiral. In October of 1994, he was fired from his job, which is when he decided to start selling.
It's like a country song.
It really is. Dr. Kenner pointed out that Tetro went from being a great, fun-loving person to an angry, twitchy mess, unable to sleep more than a couple of hours without medication. And by medication, I mean fucking tranquilizers. Pretty sure if he would have stopped doing the meth, he could have slept.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, because, I mean, cocaine's uppers.
That was the weirdest sound.
My eyeball?
Yes. I can listen back to that and be like, what the fuck?
It's my elbow. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Yeah, so if he would have stopped, or at least pulled back on the meth and the cocaine use, he probably could have slept a little bit more. See, he experienced hallucinations and would sometimes use knives to dig at them. So Dr. Kidder concluded that at the time of the murders, Tatro was suffering from an amphetamine-induced paranoid psychosis that would have a significant impact on his ability to conform his behavior and to self-examine his thinking and actions. So, not his fault?
Definitely his fault.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely.
Because he is the one who started doing meth, no matter what.
Well, there's that. And then, you know, it was a 3-day event.
Yes.
At any point, he could have fucking stopped. Mm-hmm. At any point, he could have let those fucking people go.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like, you know what? I don't want to kill someone. And that's what he fucking did.
Yep.
So, obviously, the state couldn't go along with this insanity defense. So, in their rebuttal, Dr. Wissam, I'm going to call him Dr. O, because I'm going to fuck his name up, but that's beside the point, I suppose. He was the medical director and psychiatrist at Plateau Mental Health Center, and Dr. Bob Freeman, he was a psychologist and chief executive officer of the Volunteer Behavioral Healthcare System. They testified on the state's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Though both of the doctors agreed that Tatro did not suffer from any mental illness, on the stand, Dr. Freeman reported that Tatro spoke about having some hallucinations, obviously from the meth. And Dr. Freeman also stated that taking methamphetamine, Valium, and cocaine would have effects on one's judgment. Again, duh. We all fucking know this.
Yes.
It's not a fucking excuse. Not a fucking excuse.
It's not.
Fuck them. Alright, so even though Tatro's attorney tried to persuade the jury to side with them regarding the insanity plea, they did not. They didn't go for it. In fact, they found him guilty of 2 counts of deliberated and premeditated murder, 2 counts of felony murder, and 2 counts of especially aggravated kidnapping.
Boom, son! You going to prison!
So I have, like, a shit ton more from, like, the other, because they do pretrial reports and all of that shit. But the part that I want to point out in all of this is, one, when he hurt his back, instead of going to the fucking doctor, he chose to take meth. But who got him that meth blows my fucking mind, because that's not the relationship I have with my people. He hurt his back instead of his father saying, go to the doctor, it'll be okay, we'll figure it out. No, he goes and gets him some fucking methamphetamine. He gets some methamphetamine. That's what started his journey into the methamphetamine world there.
It's his pappy.
Pappy! And then they want to, you know, pull this whole bullshit about, I get that he couldn't control his parents' divorce, he couldn't control his family members attempting and completing suicide. He can't control any of that, and I get that that would severely fuck you up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, my parents divorced when I was like 10, so at this point I'm like, ah, fuck it, whatever. He was 25.
When they divorced.
When they divorced. And it was like, I don't know. Maybe my broken home gives me a different perspective on that. Mom's gonna love that one. Yeah. But my mom also wouldn't be like, oh, you hurt your back? Here, take some meth. Also, a little tidbit here. The TBI agent, James Moore, testified that when Tatro made his statement about what had occurred, his confession, there was no remorse, there was no laughter, there was no tears, there was no emotion. They said he seemed a little bit anxious, but that could have just been because he was coming off the meth.
Yeah.
And the other fucking shit that he had.
Yeah, he didn't care that he took their lives.
Not one little bit.
He has no conscience.
So, he did accept responsibility for the killing of these 2 men, but it had appeared to Agent Moore as if Tatro was more boasting about his actions than being remorseful and saying, I did these things, please take this confession.
Mm-hmm.
So his conviction was 2 counts of felony murder, 2 counts of especially aggravated kidnapping, in the death of Roger Zammit and John Harry. Two counts of premeditated and deliberate murder of the same victims. He's currently serving two consecutive, so that means...
Consecutive.
Mm-hmm. Not at the same time. Life sentences.
So 25 and 25.
Mm-hmm. At least 25 and 25. At the time that he was sentenced, the minimum before being eligible for parole in the state of Tennessee was 25. Now it's 50, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we looked that up the other day. Look at that. But he received 22 years for each kidnapping conviction, but those are being served concurrently, so he's pretty much already taken care of those two.
Yeah, it said that he was eligible for parole this year,
mm-hmm.
in April.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping they just stack on that other 25, and he won't be eligible for till like 2040-something.
Yeah, they're not going to let him out.
God, I hope not. I don't know what he's done in prison since then, but whatever.
I know what he's done. He's been a very good person. Sam, what are you thinking?
I was going to say something terrible.
Terrible.
Terrible. So the others that had been involved in some way with the murder of Roger Zammit and John Harry were Philip Lawrence. He received a 20-year prison sentence. Since then, he got out.
Right.
It's been
95.
Yeah, it's been a minute since then. So he got out. But he's not stayed off the radar.
So what's happened to him?
In 2017, he got another 6-year sentence for felony possession of a weapon, and I think he's gotten out early since then because he is not currently in prison. James Hendrickson, which is J.J. Hendrickson, he received a 10-year sentence. He went on to assault a couple in 2014 with a fucking axe handle.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Michael Redman, he received 25 years in prison, and he is currently out. Jeffrey Sanders, 18 years. And Kenny Mason received 18 years.
Mason should have got more.
But he was state's witness. He flipped and he decided to testify in the trial, whereas all the others had opted to plead the fifth. Like,
so, what's his face got more than Kenny?
Which one's what's his face?
20 years.
Michael Redman and Philip Lawrence. Yep.
They got more than Kenny.
Yes.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure those were the two that helped dispose.
Okay.
Well, Redman and Hendrickson were the ones that helped get rid of, or to dump the bodies. Jimmy Dan was indicted for kidnapping only. He pled guilty to facilitation to commit aggravated kidnapping and received a 4-year prison sentence. With all but 9 months suspended.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It looks like he continued on with a life of substance abuse, because there was a couple of articles where he got caught with some type of substance or whatever. Let's see. Then there's Bruce Rochefort. He received 10 years for aggravated kidnapping and assault.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Neal, which is one I did not specify or talk about at all, he got 1 year probation on his plea of guilty to assault. And then he went on and was arrested later on for theft. So that is my horrific story of the death of Roger Zammit and John Harry.
That is awful. That's very sad.
It is. And what pisses me off more is that I literally could not find the obituary to either of these men.
Yeah, that's sad. Might have been in the newspaper, and the newspaper didn't get put on the website. I don't know.
I searched. I took, like, half a day and did nothing but search for these two men.
Yeah.
I did find out that Roger Zammit was 18 when he passed away, or when he was murdered, and that was pretty much it. And I know where his grave is, but...
Yeah, it's sad, Sam.
Yeah. So, to switch gears altogether. So, I know I told you this story before,
mm-hmm.
but the recording was shit. So I didn't get to.
We're robots. We were JP. Eat shit. Turn nuggets. Bow,
bow. Anyway, so at one point I went to meet with this family, and this woman had, she's an older woman,
mm-hmm.
and had to get them to fill out a piece of paper. And it was like a week after they were in a car accident. And she's like this 70 some odd year old woman. And she was so fucking funny. I'm going to hell. But anyway, so she's filling out this paper for me. And all of a sudden she like grabs her chest and she goes, "Oh, my chest, it hurts. Oh, it's so sore." I'm like, yeah, it doesn't sound like that was a pleasant experience at all. Because awkward as fuck over here. And then she goes and she grabs her stomach. And she goes, "But oh my titties." Oh my titties. They got stuck in the steering wheel. Crack a smile. I don't know how the fuck I did it. Once I left, I got in the car and it laughed my ass off. So every time I get in my car now, I'm like, oh, damn. Like I said, I'm going to hell.
She got him stuck in the steering wheel. Oh, them titties. Oh my gosh.
But I died. I died laughing the moment I got in the car. And
I would have lost it then. I don't know how you didn't either. Because that is the funniest shit. Oh my gosh.
It wasn't the only time she said that to me either. Because I had met with her another time. And she said the same damn thing. In a room full of people. She goes, "Oh, them titties."
That's just her catchphrase.
Oh, them titties. But what cracked me up more was that she's this sweet little southern lady, right? And you would think that she would not go into saying, like, "them titties," yeah. Right? And be like, "Oh, my breast." No. It was, "Oh, my chest." And then a foot away, "Oh, them titties."
I am
in no way making fun or laughing at her, but the way she spoke, it broke me. Oh, them titties.
I would have pissed myself. That's what I would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is so funny. I think that was after, like, only one child, so I wasn't quite at the point where I was pissing myself every time I laughed.
No matter. I would have. Man, that is so funny.
That was...
I could not have kept my composure either.
I fucking did it. And I was able to do it the second time, too. She said that in the room full of people, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm just so sorry. I hope it gets better soon.
Hell of a mammogram.
Oh. Oh. Oh, my breast. Oh, my chest. Hold them titties.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
That is so funny.
Yep, so that's what we're ending on today. Hopefully that made you laugh a little bit rather than go full T-Rex.
So, just don't get your titties stuck in a steering wheel, guys.
Yeah, separate that shit. If you'd like to reach out to us with any questions, suggest a case, or tell us your true crime or spooky stories, you can reach out to us at
M3. Now that's the number 3. truecrimepod@gmail.com.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at M3 Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem.
Thanks for listening to our dumbasses.
Have a fan-fucking-tastic week.
Bye!